Well, happy Tuesday, everybody. It's a Ken Braverman podcast. What's going on? We're going to attempt a podcast today, but you never know. There are interruptions frequent, often, so we will see how it goes. A million things to talk about. How many are we going to get through today? You know, it's only Tuesday, and the news is already on crack. One of those weeks. Let's talk about the Zuck. The Zuck. The ginger with the ginger better than Tinder? No, actually, the ginger with Tinder. Wasn't there there was an agreement or a connection between Tinder, I think, and Facebook? So yes, Zuckerberg has all our Tinder people as well. Anyway, hospitalizing data. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. With Zuckerberg testifying in front of Congress about the Facebook situation, the data situation. It's a complicated issue. It's a problem we've never had to really deal with before, because let's rewind a few hundred years. Could you imagine a bunch of Russians going to, you know, Jackson, Mississippi in 1840 and creating political organizations to try to influence the citizens of Jackson, Missouri, to act against their own best interest. To have Mississippi secede from the Union. Can you imagine a bunch of Russians? Do you think that they would have been spotted immediately by the locals along the Mississippi? Do you think that they would have? I think they would have. And I think they would have been run out of town. Just like the Irish. Anyway, and I think they would try to run them right out of town. Of course, it could never happen 100 years ago because we live in a different world today. Today, it's very easy for us to pass information across the internet at the speed of light, get it right in front of in your bedroom at night when you are the most susceptible, you're getting ready to fall asleep and have some dreams. And what do you get? You get like a crooked Hillary meme coming in through your Facebook. And it's impactful. You know, basically, even when we see false information, even if we identify it and deem it to be false, it still has an everlasting permeating impact on our minds. Just simply exposure. It's the reason why advertising works. It's proven through every study ever that advertising works. And you think, well, why am I seeing a Geico ad every 30 seconds? Don't they know that I've seen all of their ads? And the answer is just repetition. Exposure. Then when it comes to you getting insurance, subconsciously, you're like, do I want Flo or do I want the Chameleon? That's all you know. You don't realize that, first of all those car insurance companies are like vertically integrated. Like there's like only two of them. I think State Farm owns Progressive and then Nationwide owns something else. The Esurance is Progressive. They're all the same thing. It's amazing. And that's because the insurance industry, we're not going to talk about it. I'll stop that. The funny thing I will say about the insurance industry and commercials, because we don't do commercials on the Ken Braverman podcast, I probably will never, ever take sponsors. I would never want anyone to restrict what I say. But we don't do commercials here. However, I saw a commercial today that made me laugh. There's a Progressive commercial where it's a bunch of, I think it's got to be mostly men, right? Or it's men and women. They're all sitting around a table and they're passing little snippets back and forth talking about how like they're pretending to be their parents, essentially, like, turn the lights off or don't shut the door with the air conditioning on, stuff like that. It's pretty funny. And you know, the ad ends with Progressive saying, you know, we can't stop you from turning into your parents, but, you know, we can combine your auto and home insurance policies in one. And, you know, that's the best we could do. It's a funny commercial. It makes you think, and it's cute, right? The people at Progressive generally do better commercials. Flo can act. She's funny. And that's why she's been around for several years. Geico, on the other hand, Geico feels like they picked up every writer that was fired from the cartoon Family Guy for writing nonsensical cutaway skits, and they just have them generating all of their ads. Most of their ads are miserable. They started out funny about 10 years ago, but now they're brutal. They're brutal and they lack creativity. So if we're purchasing insurance on ads alone, even though I think I'm a Geico customer, I would say go with Progressive because her flow is better. Now, back to the podcast, back to data. So when we accept, or we have this, Right, this ability to transmit opinions and send them back and forth and really have them impact people, right? Well, what are we going to do about that? Are we going to empower the individual and allow anyone to spread whatever they want? I mean, we have free speech laws. We have a First Amendment. We obviously should be able to speak. I'm doing it here right now. So, how do we put the ingredients of this recipe for a healthier democracy? How much unabridged media should we be receiving? How restrictive should our sources of media and information be? And that's a difficult question. The optimist would say, let's expose ourselves to everything and therefore make informed decisions and sift through the BS and find the gems and stick with that. The problem seems to be with that philosophy is that we are all human. And the threshold of our minds to accept information is limited, right? We can't take in Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and our local news all at the same time. We can't have four TVs going and have those streams of information just stick in our brain, right? We're not that capable. And how it plays out in social media is even worse because we're not choosing a station that goes through at least somewhat rigorous media process about what it puts on the air and its fact-checking and all that. We're just taking it in from our friends, right? We're taking in what we want to take in. And so it leads to a narrow view. Now, I am going to tie this into something going on in China. And I might get a little controversial because I've talked about this a while ago. I'm going to tie these two together. All right. In China, they are implementing a social credit system. It's like a Black Mirror episode. I have talked about this actually a few years ago, and I love the idea, even though it is so Big Brotherish. But I'll tell you why I love the idea, because you don't realize that we already have it sort of anyway. But this is just a more refined version of it. So this is what China wants to do. China wants to track, use this app that people purchase things with, and they track it all and they give you a social credit rating. So what that sort of means, dumbed down, is if you spend your money going to 7-Eleven, buying cigarettes and Miller Lite, you have less of a chance of getting a visa, of a loan, of certain things than you do if you spend your money on diapers, on salad. I don't know. I don't know what they're using or how they are delineating what is a beneficial purchase and what's a negative one. But clearly, there are items and they have certain social credit points to them, and they're judging you based on how you act. And then they're turning that into, right, a social credit score, right? Now, we have this already in the world. I'll just use the United States as an example where I'm more familiar with the details. We, of course, have a credit rating system in this world, and they do that. They do exactly what I just told you. They review your purchases, they review your spending habits, they review your available credit, they review all types of things, zip code, you name it. Of course, it's not as personalized and intrusive as one might think. It's not a personal social credit system. Imagine if the social credit system was based off of your Facebook profile, and everything that you did on Facebook was public, even your private messages. Imagine what your social credit rating would be, right? Something to think about. I bring up your private messages and I bring up everything being public because guess what happened with the Cambridge Analytica data leak? I'll tell you what happened. It was an app that they built that as soon as you filled it out, it basically put spyware on your account and dug in through Facebook and saw probably everything. Now, I don't know that for a fact. However, I do know that it got a tremendous amount of any type of relational information they can extract from the database. I've done some extraction on Facebook in the past, and I saw things change over several years. You used to be able to go in and click someone's friends and then do a Control A on the keyboard, highlight everything, and export everybody's information And I used to dump them into Excel files and do regressions on things. It was a blast. I know I'm retarded, but or a loser or whatever. But I used to do that. Then all of a sudden things changed. And you couldn't just click someone's friends and see everybody. All of a sudden you had to change your scrolling patterns to open up more people so that they knew you were a person and not necessarily a bot just trying to look at one page. They started to make things more difficult. Then they added in all those new provisions about, can I see my friend's friends? Oh, if I have a friend that I don't like, can I have that friend not see all my stuff? Oh, I got an ex-boyfriend that, you know, that messed around on me. I don't want to see her. Oh, no, wait a minute. Maybe I want to see her, but I don't want to see him. Whatever. I want to literally block out his pictures. You can do almost anything on Facebook now. However, the data is all still there. And Zuck doesn't allow us to delete it. You know, it's kind of like the Wayback Machine for Facebook. Facebook will always be there. Meaning the Wayback Machine is some bunch of computers set up to log every page on the internet, even if it goes up for a second so that we don't lose anything. God, let's keep everything. Why not? So Facebook does that. Now, I don't think that the answer is we should be able to delete everything we don't want to see again. I think we should be allowed to try to delete it. I don't think it's fair that Facebook says that we can't delete stuff. But I'll give Zuck a little credit here. I gotta see it both ways. I went through a period of emotional instability several years ago. I go through one every day. But I went through one several years ago, and I wanted to get the heck off of Facebook. And so I deleted my Facebook account. And I deleted it for several months, I believe. And you know what happened? It sucked. It was nice not browsing on there, but you can always control your own browsing if you're doing Facebook too much. You can have self-control. You don't have to worry about it. Here's what sucked. Here's what was terrible. I had posted like hundreds of videos and pictures, a lot of hockey stuff with people I played hockey with. And when I deleted my account, all that disappeared. Stuff that I put on other people's walls. Things, memories they had that they wanted to keep. I had awesome goal highlights of hockey games from 5 years. I had fights, all kinds of stuff. And because I was selfish and wanted to escape, then all of a sudden I took everyone else's memories with me. And I felt really guilty when I realized that that's what happened. So I reinstated my Facebook account. And because Zuckerberg put this restraint on my emotional fragility and refused to allow me to permanently delete everything, I did not have the awkward and a shameful, I was not shamed into apologizing to everyone for permanently deleting their memories. I just turned it back on and everything was there again. Okay, so that's the positive. That's how that can be a positive, when you won't allow people to make rash decisions and delete their entire lives. Because I have done this before. I deleted an entire server of like hundreds and hundreds of audios from 2007 to 2010 in a fit of rage. And I regret that now. I regret interviews I have done with people like Cenk Uygur at the Young Turks. I did an interview with him in 2007 from my desk at a job at a different place. And it was a good interview. It was on the Daily Show forum. Guess what's gone? The Daily Show forum on the Daily Show back with Jon Stewart, that's gone. And my interview is gone. And if you have it, I'd love to have it back because it was pretty cool. And it's gone now. And it pisses me off. Okay, so the positives of not being able to delete all your data, there it is. Well, what are the negatives? Well, the negatives are, they tie into kind of the right to be forgotten, which they have over in the European Union, which is, if you have something on there from 20 years ago, you know, if you had sex with a dog when you were, you know, 16 because you were just trying it out, it ain't right, but you don't want to have that weigh you down for the next 85 years, because it will. Right? So you should have the option to permanently remove those types of things after a period of time. And the EU has supported that view. They've made Google's life a whole more difficult by having them individually review these cases. I mean, we got to have some bots reviewing these cases from now on. I just can't have people doing this. You can't have your mom complaining, I am so sick of Google, of you know, the internet found out that I had breast cancer and I had one of my breasts removed. They know that I'm wearing a pad. I got to get that removed. Can you imagine like a billion of those requests coming in every day? Unfair. Unfair for Google to have to deal with that. But we're now in a new era of regulation of data and of the internet. You can see it with Backpage.com is now getting charged for facilitating prostitution on their website. This is one of the things that Craigslist reacted to when the legislation came out just a few months ago, I believe, where they're really going to hold these sites that are fostering this data, even if they are not perpetrating it. They're fostering it. You know, they're essentially allowing it to be on their site. So we're entering this new era of regulation of the conduit, regulation of the website. And if people are posting things on your site and you're not doing something about it, you're going to be liable. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Why should we allow even a site like Facebook to get away with everything simply because they have billions of users and tens of hundreds of billions of posts probably daily, right? And comments and everything else. Why should we allow them to get away with that? Simply because they are so large. Simply because they sit back and say, how could we possibly regulate everything? I mean, we have everyone under our umbrella. You know, we're just a site that was supposed to be for sharing pictures and commenting and liking and saying, ha ha. Instead, it's become because it is our main source of media for hundreds of millions of people across the world, because that's where all our friends are. I mean, it is the hangout, right? It's the bar. Even if you don't want to go there anymore, you can't not, because if you need to run into somebody, what are you going to do? Dig up their cell phone? You going to find somebody's cell phone number that you went to high school with 20 years ago? No, but they're right there on Facebook if they haven't changed their name to something funky because they're trying to escape. They're right there. And even if they have changed their name to something funky, guess what? You're probably still friends with some of their friends and you can find them that way. So it's the place where we all go. So if we're all going to go there, the power is immense. This is why Wall Street invested billions and billions of dollars into Facebook when they went public and continued to grow, because the conduit through which you receive information is an extremely powerful, powerful weapon. It doesn't have to be a weapon. It can be a tool for the good as well. It doesn't have to be a weapon. It can foster the benefit of society, the benefit of humanity as well. We just have to use it right. So what's the point of this podcast? What's the hospitalization of data? What am I talking about? Well, when you go to a hospital and, you know, say you're in a clean surgical room, right? They take the steps necessary to make sure that you are not overly exposed to viral loads, bacteria, microorganisms. They're going to do everything they can to make sure that if they're opening up to do a quadruple bypass on you, that, you know, a homeless guy at a bus station is not sneezing into your chest cavity. Of course, right? Well, what does that have to do with data? In a hospital, in an area, when it is important for us to sanitize our data or sanitize a room, we do it, right? Now, when you walk in the door to the hospital, there may be a bathroom, there may be some clean wipes, but anybody can walk in. But when it comes to the down and dirty, we try to make sure that it's not dirty. Okay. So what does that mean for data? It means the social credit system that they're implementing in China, while you may disagree with it, and while there are certain things that should scare us about it, in a way, it should be applied to our data. We need to have I've brought this up on previous pods before, but this is what I really feel like is the solution. On Facebook, on Twitter, anything that is a crafted message, instead of just having a like or a reaction button or something like that, it needs an automated score, similar to kind of what Reddit does. Reddit does a lot of upvoting and downvoting. However, it's still subjective based on people's votes. So if you have something like a team of Russian bots going in and upvoting stuff on the Donald sub forum all day long, you don't realize that most people do not support those views. And the only people who end up supporting are people who are passively observing it and assume that it is truth, even though it's actually a crafted message from a foreign government. That's what the problem with this is. So we need an automated score. We need artificial intelligence with as limited bias as possible to rate things. So what this is going to end up doing is, if it's implemented properly, is you'll see a Crooked Hillary meme come in through your Facebook feed with the OO and Crooked shaped like handcuffs, as they mentioned in the Cambridge Analytica story. And you will see like a green or a red and a number in the top right. And the green means that, you know, if it went through the Snopes, it was basically proven to be true and not charged by emotion or charged by a pack or charged by a part charge, meaning pushed or influenced, you know, it wasn't crafted by one of those organizations. And that it could be just as objective truth as we have. And then if it's not green or a high number, it's going to be red and a low number. And if it's red and a low number, then it's something that you should not have faith in it having objective truth, that it should be skewed in some manner. And how do you determine this? How do you write some algorithms that are going to figure this out? And it is extremely complicated. However, we are already on the path to doing this because we have image recognition software. I mean, you can see you get tagged automatically. If somebody in Bolivia posts a picture of you on Facebook, you are tagged immediately. That stuff works. It just does. So you have the ability to really diagnose a meme, diagnose a piece of media, diagnose a picture, and analyze multiple elements of it and really generate an intelligent way of analyzing whether or not something is skewed for a message, whether or not something has any validity behind it, or whether it's something else entirely. And if that was implemented, I think we would see the difference, because then when you're having an argument with your family and they say, but I know that Hillary Clinton was running a prostitution ring out of a pizza joint, you would say, do you see the red number 0.000 on that meme? Please shut the F up. Everybody in the world disagrees with you. And the only people who were pushing that were pushing it because they're from a foreign government and they're attacking the United States. Now, that goes one step further in saying, okay, not only are you going to put a score on comments, a score on memes, a score on images, a score on videos, not only are you going to do that, but are you also going to try to infer a message and infer intent? I do not think we are there yet, not even close. But I think we can at least try to infer truth. And it's worth a shot. So, hey, China. Hey, Xi Jinping. Do what you're going to do. I want to see what the negative consequences are of implementing this social credit system. I want to see people that are denied. Are we going to end up creating a race to the bottom? Like, as soon as you are blacklisted on this social credit system, are you all of a sudden really going to be pushed into becoming a felon because you can't receive the same advantages or options, opportunities as other people in the country? Maybe. Maybe. Or maybe we'll find ways to rehabilitate. Wouldn't it be great if we... I don't know. I have to see what really comprises the social credit system to tell you what, like, we put taxes on cigarettes, right? And things like that. Why? Because we don't like the smell of smoke. It's not good for your lungs. It stinks. It's a way to deliver nicotine. It's a personal vice that we all have. Maybe some of us want. I always chew tobacco instead of smoking cigarettes. Well, I sometimes smoke cigarettes, but not anymore. But I would chew tobacco because I'm like, at least that is it's a victimless crime, right? I mean, you're victimizing yourself, but it's a victimless crime in that I'm not, you know, exuding smoke everywhere and blowing into your face. Now, if I put my spit cup down and it's in a Coke bottle and you think that's a Coke, that could be a horrible, horrible, anyone who's drank dip spit, I feel sorry for you. And I think you might've just vomited in your mouth if you heard that and tried to feel how that is. So yes, in that sense, you can sometimes hurt your neighbor. But other than that, it's more of a victimless crime. I think that smoking cigarettes is something that should negatively influence your social credit score, just like it should negatively influence your health insurance premium. And I'm not against that, because you are additionally giving yourself further health consequences that you could avoid. You are making the decision to put yourself in a cohort of patients that is more likely to develop things like hypertension, lung disease, a million other things that come out with cigarettes. So if you're going to do that, then why should you pay the same healthcare premium as someone who chooses not to do that. And in that sense, I know it's a privacy violation in a lot of ways, but the health insurance companies are allowed to do it, and I kind of respect it. Now, I don't know. That's about the Ken Braverman podcast. We're at 25 minutes. We're like 7 minutes over. But watch out. Watch what Zuckerberg has to say. You're going to see a kid who tries to calculate his responses and has never really been under fire like this before, because people want him to take responsibility and to stop the lies from being spread, stop the manipulation of his site from happening. And it's something that is very difficult to do. I provided a solution here today, at least something to help us out. Let's see what he decides to do.